You want to move on to number four?
Yes.
Does that take care of administrative items?
I hope so.
Okay.
So, item number four is an opportunity for public comment, that oral comments to address the board this evening on the draft recommendations for an updated agricultural order. And we're going to have a brief staff presentation, and then we have some groups that have requested additional time for organized presentations. And I'll go ahead and tell you what those are and the times that are allocated. Clean Water Action, 11 minutes. Central Coast Alliance, United for a Sustainable Economy, 45 minutes. Ag Working Group and Farmers for Water Quality, 45 minutes. And then the combined Environmental Defense Center, Monterey Coast Keeper, Ocean Conservancy, Santa Barbara Channel Keeper, 45 minutes. Am I operating this? We just have the little screen showing over here. Well, we're trying to get the slides up on the screen. I'll point out that we have a hearing scheduled for March 15th for board consideration, deliberation, consideration of the draft agricultural order. And that will also be an opportunity for additional public input, oral comments at that time for the board. We had some suggestions, if you will, from folks representing agricultural interests that may not be sufficient for addressing the board at that time, and a request for an additional workshop. You got that working yet?
It does what it does sometimes. So. It's old, and we have to just keep singing to it.
Okay. At any rate, we had this request for an additional workshop prior to the hearing, and so our normal board meeting is scheduled for tomorrow here in this room, and so we've added this session this afternoon and this evening to provide an additional opportunity for you folks to address the board. And the rules of the road are that you should summarize what you think are the highlights from the written testimony from the record that we already have before the board. It's not an opportunity to submit additional reports or letters or anything like that. So that's the reason we're here, logistically speaking. But the bigger reason of why we're really here in terms of the water quality and public health issues that it's our responsibility to address, I'll use a slide that we've used two or three times in the past to try to explain that. So if you look at a continuum of the degree of regulation, sort of the burden of regulation, with increasing regulation going to the right, and if we look at some of our other programs, let's see if I can get this to work.
There we go.
Whoa. It advanced quickly. So we regulate another form of agriculture, which is timber, and have for a lot of years. But our degree of regulation is off to the left. That is less regulation. And we tend to be heading further to the left in terms of the degree of regulation. With urban stormwater, it's a little bit slightly newer program, especially for the smaller cities. So in a way, that degree of regulation is moving to the right, but it's kind of in the middle of this range of regulation. Municipal wastewater, that would be city treatment plants and that sort of thing, has had really the highest degree of regulation over the years. And it's partly because of the way the regional boards have developed and the whole field of environmental regulation for water has developed. And this was something that we began addressing decades ago, whereas we only have been addressing stormwater the last 15 years or so. So that's probably the reason for it. Similarly, landfills, higher degree of regulation, and drinking water pollution cases, so that would be typically cases where there's some kind of a spill of chemicals to groundwater, spill sites, and that sort of thing. High degree of regulation because of the threat to drinking water. Now, on this, we're talking about the order for agriculture. This is how we characterize the existing, adopted in 2004, conditional waiver for agriculture, way down here in the scale of things in terms of burden of regulation. I will describe the next part of this slide. So the next thing I'll talk about is the relative degree of water quality impacts. And so if we think in terms of higher degree of water quality impacts on one end and a lesser degree of water quality impacts on the left, the board members can see this now. So that thing just shuts down on its own?
Shuts down. We can switch it out with this other one, but it might take a few minutes.
Okay.
So it looks like agriculture has been blanked out.
What would you like me to do, Mr. Chair? Go ahead and terms, because the board members can see that.
Light tower over there.
Right there. One of these.
Is it going to take just a few minutes to make the switch? So why don't we wait?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
While we wait, I wanted to have a little clarification for everyone. Is that although I'm going to sit here because there's no seats available, I will recuse myself from being a participant to, you know, the discussions we have on the ag order. Okay?
Okay.
And Mr.
Right.
Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to get something in, too, as long as we're on hiatus.
Yes.
I was kind of shocked when I got onto this board at the level of restriction on ex parte communications. My experience as a labor negotiator is to kind of sit down on the side with one party and sit down on the side with another party and kind of figure out where the deal is, and that's not how it's done here. Everything is done from the podium. So I have an ex parte communication to disclose, I'm told, which is the day before I was appointed, on November 9th, I went to a workshop called Greater Visions, Crisis of the Commons, at CSUMB on the situation of water in the Salinas Valley. I learned after the fact, after I was appointed, that was an ex parte communication. I should disclose it here. And I have to say, I don't think anything I heard impacted my ability to listen impartially to what the extremely divergent opinions addressed on ag and water, and to rule impartially on that. Thank you.
Thank you. For the folks that are standing, I think there's a few more seats if you're interested in sitting in the audience. A couple in the very front row here. And it looks like there might be another one or two on this side.
There's another one over here in the middle, I think. Okay. I'll resume.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
So like I said, down the bottom of the slide now, we have the relative degree of water quality effects, or how severe the water quality impacts are, increasing to the right. And so again, talking about timber as another kind of agricultural activity, we see fewer impacts than we saw many years ago, partly because of the regulatory controls that we've put into place and monitoring programs. And by the way, that was a tiered approach. With landfills, we see, again, very moderate effects, and partially because of the degree of regulation. Municipal wastewater, same thing. Municipal wastewater used to have severe water quality impacts, including right here in the Monterey Bay area, but relatively minor now. Again, thanks to a regulatory program, I'd say. And then urban stormwater, because we have a more of a developing regulatory program, I would say, we see more impacts. Drinking water pollution cases remain the highest water quality impact in terms of causing public health problems. Now, with irrigated agriculture, that's on the far right in terms of the degree of water quality impacts, and I will discuss specifically why with the following slide. But before I do that, I'll point out that what this means is that it's our responsibility to get a little bit better matchup between this mismatch, where we have degree of regulation with the existing order and the degree of impacts over here. So if we look at the proposed draft order for 2012, the subject of our workshop here, this is the way we're seeing this in terms of the degree of regulation. So in comparison to these categories up here, where we have the different tiers, which Lisa McCann will be discussing in a little more detail in a minute, but we see Tier 1 still being way off to the left here in terms of degree of regulation. Tier 2, a little bit more of a regulatory burden, more consistent with the existing conditional waiver that we already have, and Tier 3 being more stringent, and Tier 3 is the higher risk sites or farms. So why do we say that the problems are severe? Well, these are, of course, detailed in our staff reports that we've had over the last 2.5 years or so. We've actually been working on this this order update for more like 3.5 years, more than that. But our drinking water is impaired and actually contaminated. That means exceeding the maximum contaminant level in a lot of the areas of our groundwater and our major basins, where in particular where we have irrigated agriculture. In addition to that, we see severe fish and aquatic habitat problems in terms of nutrients, including nitrate, toxicity associated typically with pesticides, as well as sediment problems, which are not only a problem in our creeks, but also our wetlands downstream, our estuaries, even our harbor, and the ocean. So what are we proposing with this, with these severe problems? Order includes these practices for groundwater protection, for discharge control or treatment, and really a focus on irrigation and nutrient management, and monitoring and reporting to have some accountability to give us some assurance that we are going in the right direction in terms of reducing this problem and making improvements with water quality and with public health issue. With that, Lisa McCann of our staff will give us some more details. Oh, you need this. And by the way, I'll also point out that seated up here is Angela Schroeder, who leads our unit that is working on this agricultural order, and Chris Rose supervises our unit that develops total maximum daily loads for the impaired waters. Lisa?
Good afternoon. So I have up here on the screen a simple timeline, and I'm going to use this to orient everyone to the process and to remind you of how long we've been working on updating this order, as well as all the many workshops and hearings that we've held, the opportunities for public comment, and the numbers of times that we've revised the draft order in response to all that input. So we have been actively updating the agricultural order for, as Roger said, almost 4 years. We started around July 2008, and we're still in process now. Let's see. I'm just going to practice this here. Yeah. Okay, got that. Here, February. From December 2008, in this window right here, to September 2009, staff worked with stakeholders to develop a draft recommendation. In February 2010, staff released a preliminary draft order that contained staff's recommendations at that point. We've had 5 workshops and hearings with the board, and these are shown as the blue stars on the timeline. And today makes a sixth workshop. Additionally, staff has met with agricultural representatives and other stakeholders to solicit input hundreds of times, and Table 2 in your staff report lists many of those actual events and meetings. Okay, these green bars, pretty obvious, but here, show the various written comment periods and the opportunities that interested persons had to submit alternatives in the earlier point in the process, and in these other windows, various opportunities for additional written comments. In April 2010, we had 3 alternatives submitted by agricultural interests as well as by environmental interests. And then agricultural representatives submitted additional written information about their alternative in March and May of 2011. And again, throughout all of these comment periods together, we have received approximately 2,000 comment letters. We've revised the order 4 times in response to all these comments and alternatives and various input. This actually amounted to hundreds of changes since the preliminary draft recommendations in February 2010. And the majority of these changes were, in fact, responsive to comments that we got from agricultural interests. So we had planned a hearing in September of 2011, which was postponed, and we're now picking up where we left off to hold a hearing to consider the draft agricultural order and give members of the public another opportunity to comment. Staff maintains that the draft order, after the various revisions and responses to comments, best meets Water Board goals, policies, laws, and priorities, including protection of drinking water. And it also includes several components from the agricultural alternative proposal and responsive to agricultural interest comments. And a few examples. Include reasonable tiers based on discharge and risk to water quality, flexibility to select method of compliance or to propose an alternate method of compliance that applies for many provisions, coalitions, cooperative management, or cooperative treatment plans, alternative monitoring for cooperative implementation projects, such as if a group of growers combines their discharge and sends it through a wetland or other treatment facility. Since July 2010, the draft order has only had minor changes. This is because the version of the draft order at that point last summer already contained a lot of the flexibility and opportunity for cooperative efforts and adaptive management that has predominantly been recommended in the agricultural alternatives submitted. Management practices and monitoring approaches are expected to evolve and improve over time, and we believe that the draft order already contains the opportunity for this adaptation and evolution of implementation. Okay, now I'd like to summarize the provisions that are contained in the draft order. I'm going to show you the requirements. I'm going to start by showing you the requirements that were in the that are in the current 2004 conditional waiver. And that's the waiver that the board adopted in 2004 and has been in place for 8 years now. So it includes meeting water quality standards, file a notice of intent to be enrolled, develop and implement a farm plan, various management practices, submit a management practice checklist, participate in surface receiving water monitoring, and most growers fulfill that now through the cooperative monitoring program. Fulfill education requirements. Okay, oops, sorry. These are the requirements, again, of the current existing order, and we prepared the requirements in the draft order by building on these requirements. We also scaled the requirements in the draft order by tiers, and those are tiers that represent risk to water quality. So as you might recall, Tier 1 is the tier that represents the least risk to water quality, and Tier 3 is the tier where farms in that tier meet criteria that represent the most risk to water quality. So the proposed requirements in the draft order include all of these requirements from the 2004 conditional waiver, plus these requirements that are shown in blue: groundwater monitoring and reporting, and backflow prevention and proper well abandonment in order to protect groundwater. In addition, we propose to improve the reporting requirements as well as to reduce the reporting burden on growers with this requirement, which is to submit annual compliance information through an online entry form. And that would be much like the recent electronic notice of intent updates that the majority of growers in our region have already completed. This form would then replace the existing requirement in the 2004 conditional waiver to submit a management practice checklist. So again, notice the heading on this column still says 2004 conditional waiver. Keep an eye on it. It's going to change in a minute. I'm going to do that again. So now, as you can see, with the management practice checklist crossed out, the requirements here make up the requirements for Tier 2 farms in the draft order. And again, Tier 2 are the farms that pose moderate risk to water quality and includes the majority of acreage enrolled in the existing conditional waiver. As you can see, these requirements are similar then as a package to what's in the 2004 conditional waiver, with these few additional requirements included because they're necessary to protect groundwater as well as to improve reporting of compliance information. These are the Tier 1 requirements on the left. And again, Tier 1 are the farms that pose most minimal threats to water quality. And under the draft order, these farms will actually have reduced requirements and reporting burden compared to the 2004 conditional waiver, because these requirements are the same requirements but minus the annual compliance. Sorry, the same requirements as Tier 2, but minus the annual compliance information. Both Tier 1 and Tier 2 include a large portion of the acreage and farms in the region. And finally, we have Tier 3 on the right. So Tier 3 farms must implement all the requirements for Tier 2 farms. Plus, some of these farms will have to conduct individual discharge monitoring if they, in fact, have runoff. Another subset of Tier 3 farms, those that have a high risk of nitrate loading, must develop an irrigation and nutrient management plan. I'm here, just make sure you're with me. As well as implement irrigation and nutrient management practices to meet nutrient balance targets. And finally, another subset of Tier 3 growers would have to develop water quality buffer plans. And this requirement applies only to farms that contain or are adjacent to water bodies listed as impaired for sediment, turbidity, or temperature.
Lisa, before you move off that screen, what's the difference in the Tier 3 irrigation and nutrient management plan requirement that is not in the Tier 2 farm plan, which has the same language?
That's a good question. I'm going to let Angela Schroeder answer that.
I could find those specific sections in the order, but in general, it requires additional reporting of specific elements of the farm plan. For example, growers who within Tier 3 who would have a high nitrate loading risk would have to, for those particular farms that have a high nitrate loading risk, would have to determine their crop need for nitrogen based upon published literature, soil tissue tests, or whatever information they justify as appropriate, and compare that to the nitrogen they use to come up with their nitrogen balance targets. So in general, it's a similar requirement with more reporting.
I have a question, a couple of questions as well. Can you give me a sense of approximately what percentage of acreage is in each of those three tiers?
That's my next slide. Shall I go on?
No, that's good. Yeah, go on.
I can come back to this one, too. Just before I move on, I just wanted to reiterate that these Tier 3 requirements, collectively and clearly, include the most new or additional requirements compared to the 2004 conditional waiver as well as compared to the other tiers. And this is because of their increased threat to water quality and higher risk for pollution loading. So therefore, we are recommending more reporting and monitoring to verify the effectiveness of practices and discharge control implemented at these particular farms. Okay, so I'm going to summarize and add the layer of what percentage in acreage is in each tier. So the Tier 2 requirements in the draft order are similar to the current order, with the addition of a few requirements such as groundwater protections, as I mentioned previously. The requirements for Tier 1 are less than Tier 2 and therefore obviously less than the existing conditional waiver. And that's because these particular farms pose a more minimal threat to water quality. The requirements for Tier 3 are greater than Tier 2, and this is obviously due to their much higher risk to water quality, and they necessarily have requirements then that go beyond the existing 2004 conditional waiver. Tier 2 includes most of the acres. Yeah, includes the most acreage in the region at 173,046 acres. I said that wrong, didn't I? 174,150 acres. And many farms at a count of 1,523 farms. So the resultant impact of the proposed draft order is that the majority of acreage in irrigated agriculture in the region must meet similar requirements as they must meet now to prevent adverse impacts to water quality. In Tier 1, we have both a large area and most of the farms, but with reduced requirements. And again, this is appropriate because they pose the most minimal risk to water quality. This tier also includes most of the small farms in the region. And Tier 1 covers 141,186 acres and 1,986 farms, and that group then would have reduced requirements. Tier 3 falls at only 14% of the acreage in the region, 51,019 acres, and 103 or 3% of all the farms. These are the larger farms growing high-risk crops in areas where water bodies are already impaired or where drinking water wells are already polluted with nitrate. We're focusing more requirements on this small number of farms compared to Tier 1 and Tier 2 and the existing order. And again, staff maintains that that is necessary because and appropriate given the increased threat to water quality that is expected from these farms. So again, I wanted to reiterate today the importance of renewing the draft order so that the degree of regulation is more appropriate to the level of water quality impairment caused by irrigated agricultural runoff in the Central Coast region. Show you where we have been and where we are in this process. Starting in 2008, lasting more than 3 years and ready to present to the draft order to the board for consideration. I wanted to remind you of the extensive public input opportunity and the numerous times that we've been responsive to the input with the revisions that we've made to the orders, the draft orders. The draft order already includes requirements that scale based on a farm's risk to water quality. It's adaptable but ensures adequate water quality protection. It requires necessary improvements in both implementation of waste discharge controls and improvements in the measurement and reporting of effectiveness and progress to improve water quality. It meets water quality goals, board priorities, and is consistent with the law. Finally, the draft order appropriately addresses the severe water quality problems from irrigated agricultural runoff, including harm to fish and aquatic life, from the widespread toxicity and habitat degradation we've seen, and unsafe nitrate in drinking water affecting thousands of people. Adopting the 2012 draft agricultural order will ensure healthy aquatic habitats and clean drinking water sooner. That concludes my comments.
Okay, thank you. Any?
Yeah, I have, Mr. Chair, one question.
Go ahead.
Lisa, can you tell me again what's the difference between Tier 2 and Tier 3? Are we still talking about acreage? There was a one-time acreage qualifications for tiers.
So you're asking about the tier criteria?
Well, not the total criteria, but how does a farm go from Tier 2 to Tier 3 or Tier 3 to Tier 2? Am I making it sense? What is the you mentioned the qualifications of being on a waterway for Tier 3. Who's going to answer that?
If you can give me just a second.
And have you done away with the number of acres for the tiers?
Okay.
Part A, Part B of Tier 3.
All right, I found the slide, and Angela's going to answer your question.
Okay.
So this slide summarizes the tiering criteria. You asked specifically about the difference between Tier 3 and Tier 2. So Tier 3 is what we would characterize as farms that present a greater risk and have a higher potential to load more pollutants. So Tier 3 includes two criteria. Simply, if a farm uses chlorpyrifos or diazinon, which are known to cause toxicity in the Central Coast region in our agricultural areas, and they discharge to an impaired surface water, they would be in Tier 3. So it requires both the use of the chemical and a discharge to a polluted stream or creek for toxicity or pesticides. That's
so you have to have both of those,
yes,
to qualify for 3. So if you do one or the other, you're in Tier 2? Is that what you're telling me?
If you use chlorpyrifos, if you don't use chlorpyrifos or diazinon, then you would be in Tier 1, possibly. If you use chlorpyrifos and diazinon but don't discharge it, you would just be in Tier 2. That's correct.
Okay. And my Part B of the question was acreage.
Right. So the acreage is in that second bullet there of Tier 3. Acreage only applies if you're growing a crop that has a high risk to load nitrogen to groundwater. It doesn't apply in any other scenario. So, for example, a farm that is 5 acres of a crop type that with a higher risk to load nitrogen has less risk of a load to groundwater than a 1,000-acre farm. And that's why we have grouped acreage specifically with specific crop types. The acreage does not apply to anything else but that particular crop type.
And refresh my memory, the nitrogen crops are basically the leafy greens and strawberries, is that?
It includes vegetables and some strawberries, one of them. I can't remember if it includes other berry types, but strawberries is one of them. And the the crop types that we've listed are based upon those identified as the highest risk based upon the nitrate hazard index defined by UC, University of California at Riverside.
Okay. Any other board questions? All right. Before we get to our prepared presentations, I've got one speaker card for Senator Blakeslee's office. Is this Hans Poschmann? If you're here. And would like to come up and present your comments to the board. Is he here? Is there anyone from Senator Blakeslee's office that is in the audience?
We can check after this.
Okay. All right, Mr. Briggs, why don't we go to our prepared presentation?
Right, so